Haas Advantage Car, Fast Signs of Fikesville, and of course, Cove Pizza and Parisa's Bakery. Now back to Jay and Larry.
Welcome back to Shalom USA. Our number 410-481-1370, live on the web at www.v1370.com. We're welcoming to the program Dr. Yitzhak Levine. You, all of you out there who are regular readers of the Jewish Press will know the name. Dr. Levine is a frequent contributor to the Jewish Press, where he writes on American Jewish history in particular. He's also a professor in the Department of Mathematical Sciences at Stevens Institute of Technology in Hoboken, New Jersey. Dr. Levine, thank you for being with us here on Shalom USA.
You are welcome, sir.
So I see your main professional interest is in mathematical sciences, but you must have American Jewish history as a very serious avocation. Is that correct?
It is true. I am a mathematician by training, but about 3 years ago I became interested in American Jewish history, and to some extent this has become, quote, an obsession, unquote, with me.
Well, I can tell because the articles you write are in such great detail, and it seems like one of your specialties, Dr. Levine, is to uncover some of the unknown stories that people don't even remember now, that are totally forgotten, but very much affected the Jewish history of the United States, and in particular, the history of Orthodoxy in the United States.
Yes, indeed. My focus is on people who remained observant or who attempted to remain observant in the face of great difficulty, and there were certainly great difficulties in remaining observant in the United States or in America before it became the United States, given the small Jewish population, the lack of any yeshivas, the lack of rabbonim, etc. And so my interest, again, is in people who were observant.
And many of these people, like you say, really were pioneers. I thought we'd talk about a couple of them who were very much, had a great impact here in Baltimore, and because of their impact in Baltimore, had a more widespread impact as well. One individual you wrote about recently is Rabbi Dr. Henry Schneeberger, Pinchas Halevi
Schneeberger.
Tell us a little bit about him and his life here in Baltimore.
Rabbi Schneeberger is of interest for a number of reasons. He is the first American-born, university-educated, Orthodox ordained rabbi in America. People have to realize that there were no rabbonim in America, no Orthodox rabbonim, until 1840 when Rabbi Abraham Rice came to America.
To Baltimore.
Pardon?
To Baltimore, in fact.
Yes, Rabbi Rice came to Baltimore, that's right. Rabbi Schneeberger was born in America in 1848, and he went to public school because that was the only place to go. He obviously had some religious education on the side. After graduating high school, he went to Columbia College. It was then Columbia College, not Columbia University. He obtained a bachelor's degree and then a master's degree. And he decided that he wanted to study for the rabbinate. He wanted to be a rabbi. But there was no place to go in America to become a rabbi. So he ended up going to Europe. He first went and studied. He had a relative by the name of Bundy, who had a son-in-law by the name of Marcus Lehman, who people probably will recognize that name. He was a famous novelist, an Orthodox novelist. He studied with Lehman for a couple of years, and then he was able to study in Hungary with Rabbi Hildesheimer in Eisenstadt. When Rabbi Hildesheimer went to Berlin, Schneeberger followed him there, and the rabbinical seminary in Germany, in Berlin, was opened, and Schneeberger attended that, and at the same time he attended the University of Berlin. He got smicha from Ezra Hildesheimer, and also he earned a PhD from the University of Berlin. Then he came back to America and became the first rabbi of Congregation Chizuk Emunah. So Rabbi Schneeberger is really a pioneer in that sense, and he served in that position for about 40 years until 1916.
And one of the things your articles really point out to Dr. Levine are some of the differences between contemporary Orthodoxy and Orthodoxy in the past. And for example, correct me if I'm wrong here, but in the 19th century, mid to late 19th century, maybe even a little bit later, Orthodox congregations wanted someone who not only had simicha but had secular credentials as well. Is that right?
This became a trend amongst the German congregations. In fact, this was a trend also in Germany. In the 19th century, it became, after the emancipation, basically a given rule that if you did not have a secular education in Germany, you couldn't be a rabbina, and the congregations here also in America The German ones in particular followed that, yes.
In fact, that was followed by another interesting personality with a great relevance to Baltimore that you have profiled, Reverend Dr. Shepshul Schaffer.
Yes, Rabbi Schaffer is another interesting person in the fact that he was educated very traditionally, as opposed to Schneeberger, who really... have a formal yeshiva education in his youth and had to spend several years studying before he could actually study under Rabbi Hildesheimer. Schaffer had an unbelievable yeshiva education, and he was really a child prodigy and had attended regular yeshivas, and then at about the age of 19 or 20, he decided that he wanted to pursue secular subjects. And the only place in the world, really, where one could study in an Orthodox environment and also pursue secular subjects was at the Rabbinah Seminar, the Rabbinical Seminary in Berlin. So, but to get into the Rabbinical Seminary, you needed a university degree, which Rabbi Schaffer did not have. So Rabbi Schaffer spent a number of years with Philip Klein, Hillel Klein, Rabbi Hillel Klein, who eventually came to America and earned an undergraduate degree. Then he went to the Rabbinah Seminary in Berlin. Now you have to keep in mind that he was an East European, and East Europeans and the German Jews didn't always hit it off so well. And yet he made his way there. He got his smicha there. Actually, he got smicha from a number of people. He got his smicha there. He got his PhD in Germany. And he went, after he had gotten his smicha from Rabbi Hildesheimer, he went around to a number of prominent rabbis. One of them is a Rabbi Lapidus, Moshe Lapidus, who was a contemporary of Yisrael Salanta and was known also as a brilliant Talmud Chacham. He got his smicha from him also, and he also married Rabbi Lapidus' daughter. And then he came here to Baltimore. He became the first rabbi of Congregation Sheretz Emunos, and Congregation Sheretz Israel, served as the rabbi there until 1933 when he passed away, and then he was followed a few years later by Rabbi Shimon Schwab, whom I'm sure people will recognize that name.
A number here, 410-481-1370, we're talking to Dr. Yitzhak Levine. One thing I found very fascinating about the biography of Rabbi Schaffer was his attempt to create a seminary here in Baltimore, the Rabbinical Seminary of Baltimore. And this had been successful, this would have preceded Yeshiva University as the first rabbinical seminary, Orthodox seminary in the States. Is that right?
Yes, that's true. He was a man of vision. People have to understand that what we take for granted today in the Orthodox world, namely that we send children to yeshivas, was not something that was taken for granted, certainly not in the 19th century and even in the early part of the 20th century. Many very observant people didn't really see any problems or didn't have any other alternative but to send their children to public school. And this led to many, many young people leaving their Jewish roots and not really following in the footsteps of their parents and observing Judaism. And Rabbi Schaffer understood also that it was necessary to train our own homegrown religious leaders. And so he attempted to set up a rabbinical college in Baltimore. The students attended Johns Hopkins during the day, and then he was their Rebbe. But unfortunately, it lasted only about a little more than a year, and then there just wasn't enough interest, wasn't enough money to keep it going. Because again, the average person in the street said, what do we need it for?
I find it interesting as well, though, that and unfortunately it wasn't successful, but it's interesting that the model he had in mind was one, again, that combined both yeshiva learning as well as a secular component as well.
That's because he himself was the product of such an education. And he also understood that in America, that was the only thing at the time that would have been viable. You needed a rabbinical leader who could speak the language of the people, not just the English language, but also who was secularly educated, who knew what was going on in the world.
Now, for a lot of people out there might recall his name as well for something he's also famous for, Rabbi Schaffer, that is, which is there was one American at the first Zionist Congress in Basel in 1897, and that one American was none other than Baltimore's own Rabbi Schaffer.
Yes, Rabbi Schaffer was an early Zionist, very early, and what's interesting also is the fact that much of his congregation was, probably one could say, anti-Zionistic. They certainly weren't sympathetic to Zionism. Sheretz Israel was known as a place that was not particularly sympathetic to Zionism, yet he himself was joined the first groups of Zionists here in America and became involved with them, and then actually, as you say, went to the first Zionist convention and then attended a later one also subsequently. But he was the only American representative in Switzerland at the first conference.
And he himself being very active as well in the Mizrahi movement.
Yes, he was very active in the Mizrahi movement, and he was very pro-Israel, felt that it was important to support Israel. He helped raise money for Israel. They founded some schools in Israel to help the immigrants, etc. So yes, he was a pioneer in that, certainly.
We're talking to Dr. Yitzhak Levine, who has made it one of his causes to uncover unknown stories about the people who made American Jewish history possible and the forcing of American Orthodoxy possible. And I wonder whether, Dr. Levine, one of your purposes as well is sort of to tell it like it is. We've talked in this program about the fact that there is a tendency among some Orthodox biographies out there to whitewash history, and how, to me, it's a disturbing trend, and what I see in what you write is really just presenting the facts as they are.
You have touched on something that is near and dear to my heart. The fact of the matter is that I say that there are not only Holocaust deniers, but there are Orthodox deniers. There are people who will deny that certain things occurred, and there's an attempt in what are called by many Gedolim books to paint a picture that certainly is not realistic. Rav Aaron Feldman, who is Rosh Yeshiva Neir Yisrael in Baltimore, wrote an article in the Jewish Observer a number of years ago about these quote-unquote Gedolim books, in which he said that if you were at a Levaya and you listened to what was going on but didn't know whose Levaya it was, you wouldn't know which Gedolim they were talking about, because everything is exactly the same. Person is born a child genius, the person never has any doubts, never has any problems, spends their life learning, marries a righteous woman, founds a yeshiva, and is involved in Yiddishkeit. That's not history. People had struggles. In fact, listeners may be interested, there's an article by J.J. Shochet called Facing the Truths of History, in which he talks about a number of rewritings, or at least of things that have been left out. My goal is, as you say, to tell it like it is. But I have to be honest with you, this is not so easy in many publications. The Jewish press is willing to publish things that are fact. Other publications seem to be afraid to touch them. I say, perhaps a bit cynically, there's something called the PC Haredi Police, and they are certainly very, very active.
Yeah, that's disturbing. I mean, isn't one of the Medrash or Gemara somewhere where it says that one of the seals of God is Emet, truth?
Yes. But you see, if the truth doesn't agree with what you think the truth is supposed to be, then very often there's an attempt to either suppress it or to gloss it over or to deny it.
That's the problem. I'm sure that the same sort of mindset would have loved to have censored many aspects of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, the Pentateuch as well.
So. Yes.
Well, I appreciate you being with us, Dr. Levine, and I recommend to all of our readers out there, if you're interested in American Jewish history, the columns are wonderful.